Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Todd Spaulding. Hello, Todd.
Hello, Gary.
So Todd's parks director here in Jefferson City, and so that's a vast area of enjoyment, opportunities for local residents as well as tourists. So Todd, it kind of strikes me that as we get into August, you're transitioning from your summer season to your fall season. So how did the summer go as far as parks is concerned?
The summer went good. The summer was busy with our pools being open, and we didn't have one day where we weren't open at the pools this year, which is like a first for us.
Wow.
Summer camps were huge this year and are finishing up as well. As well as, you know, having the amphitheater and concerts, it starts to wind down in the fall. Lots of baseball tournaments, basketball tournaments, volleyball, lots of stuff. The link was full a lot of the summer. It was great to see, but lots of things going on, and yeah, we're transitioning into the fall, the beginning of school. Things slow down for just a bit, and then we'll pick back up.
Okay. So let's jump back a bit. So how did things look during the pandemic? How did that really affect parks, if at all?
I think it affected us, for sure. Not as much as some. We felt like dealt with it great as a staff and as a community. We kept our parks mostly open and safe, but it was good. Sales tax revenues continued to improve even during the pandemic. So we were able to keep our staff, keep them happy, and we were able to keep our project kind of list going because our sales tax revenue increased as well, which a lot of people were not able to say. But here in our community, our economy stayed strong in that area, so we were able to kind of push through. Changed obviously how we staff things and how we did things, but for the most part, I think we stayed pretty strong.
Okay. Well, you mentioned this, so let's talk a little bit about the funding mechanism for parks. So the city is a little bit unusual in that it has a dedicated parks sales tax. So tell us a little bit about that, as well as what other funding revenues that you have.
We basically have three, as a parks department, three funding sources. Our department is what's called an administrative parks department. So it's managed by an appointed parks commission that's appointed by the city council and mayor. So some might say that we don't have as much oversight and we should be under city council control. My argument to that is we have more control. Not only does the city council approve our budget, but we also have a dedicated park commission that focuses on where our money is spent. So three sources: a dedicated park sales tax that was overwhelmingly passed by this community. If my memory serves, 75% or so approved that. That half-cent sales tax is supposed to be used exclusively on parks and parks-related things.
Mm-hmm.
The second source is every 5 years we get a portion of the capital improvement sales tax from the city. That number, when our dedicated park sales came into place, went from, I believe, 25% to now to 10%. So
okay.
It decreased, but we still get a little bit so we can focus on some capital things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, our third source is obviously revenue that we generate. So through summer camp fees and pool passes and golf passes and all those things, that's money that we generate. That's good to help and how we operate. Even though we're 60% subsidized,
mm-hmm.
so that revenue that comes in for programs doesn't pay the expenses, but it helps.
Yeah.
So those are our three sources.
You know, it's interesting. We had a story recently, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes, about a discussion that started about this idea of recovered expenses,
mm-hmm.
where, as you mentioned, 40% of the expenses for parks are recovered through fees and other methods of revenue collection.
Mm-hmm.
How does that stack up to other cities?
The organization that we hired do these national studies, and I wanted to bring them in because I wanted to see where we're at, how we can improve, become more efficient, because that just means the more we recover, the more we can spend in new facilities and new playgrounds and all these things, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's important to me that we become an inclusive parks department. There are lots of places that we need to add to. And if we're losing money in a lot of programs, we're not able to do that. So when they came in and they looked at us, the first thing they said was they applaud us for doing this study when we're pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that's 9 out of 10 times, they said, was the number they used, that they get hired when things are going bad.
Right.
But we wanted to kind of hit the ground running. We wanted to get ahead of it. And so they said that we're in the top end. Typically, park departments are anywhere from 25 to 30 cost recovered. So we starting ahead of the curve. We feel like that 50 to 55 is an attainable number. And with that comes another $750,000, $800,000 that we can invest back into our parks departments.
Yeah.
Because think about this, 1,400 acres of parks that we have, okay? Most of the things that we do could never recover costs, right?
Right.
Parkland, to parks means green space, it means outdoor areas. Every time we mow, every time we have to clean restrooms or fix something that gets broken, those are things that are never going to be recovered, nor should they. Those
right.
are quality of life things.
Right.
So we need to make sure that those things remain strong. We're not just doing programs that don't recover costs.
Yeah. What are some of the areas where you've stated a goal, or the Parks Department has a stated goal of trying to reach 50%, mm-hmm. kind of that next step? So what's the strategy for trying to achieve that?
The first thing you have to do is you just have to take a long, hard dive into mm-hmm. to our programs. So part of what we were able to accomplish is for each program now, we're able to work with this company, and now we're going to have this spreadsheet that's pretty detailed. And so we can go through each program and say, okay, here's how many staff we need. Here's our overhead costs. Here's our insurance costs. Here's everything that we have. And it'll give us a really good hard look of each particular program, where we have areas that we can save, where we need to add to, how we price each program is going to be included in that. So the next step is taking a hard dive into each and every program that we offer.
You know, I find that interesting. My initial reaction when I read about this was, so you're looking at perhaps increasing the fees for, you know, greens fees or fees to get into the pool or whatever, but there's an element also of cost savings. So what are some areas that listeners could better understand how the parks could save money?
I think that there's, you know, supplies, there's obviously all the little things, but our mm-hmm. biggest cost in parks and recreation, as well as other government agencies, is employee expenses, you know.
Sure.
For our department, that's around 50%. For other city departments, that's 90%. I mean, it's a high number. So that's really where you got to look, right?
Yeah.
It's like, do we need this number of people? Or do we need a smaller number of people and pay them more,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
The industry standard of all successful businesses that I've heard of is that you really look at your underperformers and ask yourselves, do you need them? And you really look at your overachievers and say, can I pay them a little bit more? And that's really what we need.
Yeah.
You know, and I've caught a lot of flack from some on how I've decided that's where I need to go with my staff. And so we've had to pull back a little bit on that, and it's caused a problem. But that's what we have to look at. We have
sure.
to look at those expenses. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a number too, right, of
right.
how many participants you need to pull in.
Right.
You know, we need to look at that sweet spot. Is that number 20 and have this many employees? Or is it, you know, 65 and have this number of employees? So we just have to look at all those things.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Talking about pools as an example, you have to have a certain number of lifeguards, mm-hmm. for instance. You can't shortchange that for safety purposes. And then there's always that mix of trying being competitive salary-wise to attract good candidates, because again, you don't want to sacrifice on safety. But perhaps there are things like mowing, you mow a little less, or there are different approaches to that. So I think that's an interesting aspect of it. So what sort of challenges, if any, did you face as far as attracting employees the last year or so?
Tremendous challenges. But we've really worked through it. I have to tell you, in the two areas that we, you know, our number of employees swell up to almost 400 in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's huge. And so many employees that we have with lifeguards and summer camp employees, those are the two areas, as well as like game officials, like referees and umpires. Those are the big areas that nationally people are really, really struggling with, right?
Mm-hmm.
We hear stories every day about how pools aren't open because they don't have enough lifeguards.
Or right.
This happens. Well, I am proud to say that Julie, our director in that area, didn't have to do that at all and opened two pools. And I just couldn't be more impressed with how our staff and Angie Tobin with summer camp and Steve Shellman with the youth sports, a lot of others too, but those three in particular, they did an unbelievable job. But challenging? Absolutely. But this year, They spent a lot more time at the high schools, right? They spent a lot more time with Lincoln University, a lot more time trying to recruit and market via social media and do some new things. And I will commend them for a job well done.
Yeah. So, facing those challenges, what are some of the biggest opportunities that Parks are going to be facing in the coming year?
Well, our goal, our number one goal, is to be an inclusive park department so that everyone has opportunities to play. You know, we talk a lot, I've talked from the very beginning, that our goal is, in order to be an inclusive park department, we want to get everybody to a park in a 10-minute walk, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have lots of needs that we're addressing there. A lot of neighborhood parks now, playgrounds that are 30 years old that need to be replaced so that people have opportunity to play. So that's the biggest thing. And then we're going to continue to look at areas where, you know, we want to increase, again, the footprint of the amphitheater. We saw a huge economic impact with the amphitheater this year. We want to continue to offer more and diverse acts, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of acts that we've had, a lot of country acts. So now we want to, you know, we got some rock and roll, and we got some Christian this year. We want to move into some hip hop, some R&B, some other kinds of things too, so we can get more diverse acts into our amphitheater. We're, you know, moving forward with the plans for a botanical garden with the Master Gardeners. That's a great opportunity that we're going to see come to fruition this year. So lots of economic impact things as well as inclusive things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're impressed with, between our youth sports and what Aaron Grafrath has done with the link tournaments and all the things out at 63 Diamonds. I think last year alone it was close to $6 million of economic impact that just the park department did for this community. And I think that's really impressive number.
Yeah. For those who aren't familiar with it, what kind of teams are those two venues drawing and from where?
Oh, all over. I mean, you know, between the link and, you know, the fact that Aaron did not only basketball, which, I mean, 20-some tournaments, I believe, this year, maybe 30. But we did volleyball. We had a huge state gymnastics events. All these different sorts of things. And they're coming from all over. The judo was another one. I forgot to mention it. They're coming from all over the place. And so we work with CVB and how, you know, we have an economic impact calculator so we can really, it's industry standard on how, you know, when this many teams come in or when this many people come in, this percentage of them are from outside of our area. So they're staying, they're eating, they're shopping, all those things.
Sure.
So they are coming from all over the state, but also outside of the state, for sure. I remember that judo tournament. I think there were six or seven states represented in that particular one. So.
Yeah.
Same thing at the amphitheater when we have an artist that's pretty well known. People follow him. They sure do. Buck Cherry, I remember the last time there was folks from, I believe, Alabama, and then across the state, all over the place. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat to see.
Yeah.
People say, I didn't know you had this here. And they said, oh, and then we saw the bridge going over to the island. So we walked down that the next day after we stayed at our hotel and this and that. So I think it's pretty fun to hear those stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you mentioned a couple more recent projects, one that's in development, one that's a little bit farther along in development. So let's start with the Botanical Garden. Give folks an idea of what that project is all about, what it's going to look like, and how it's functioning.
So the main footprint of the Botanical Garden is going to be at Riverside Park, where the caretaker's house is. There's basically about 15 acres or so back in there, actually. You can't really tell it, but it's in there. We're going to focus on this first phase in about the 3 acres or so right around the caretaker's house. So kind of a parking entrance. We've done some work on renovating the house. We're going to start with the gardens around the house. And it's really just a lovely space. It all was kind of born out of the fact that the Master Gardeners had their gardens at North Jefferson Park. And you know, those 100-year floods were happening every 5 years.
Yeah.
And it was really becoming burdensome for them and their plants and really an extra amount of work. Mm-hmm. And so we started really looking at, okay, where could be a permanent location where that part of it we don't have to worry about, right? And we can take a space, and this particular space at Riverside has this gorgeous lookout over the river, too, that people don't really know about. It's beautiful topographically. It's got a wonderful valley with a pond at the very bottom that will have some outdoor nature trails eventually. But it's just, you know, this is a full-fledged botanical garden. Mm. This is going to, again, attract people from outside of our community.
Sure.
As well.
You know, as you say that, I'm sitting here, I mean, I've been to botanical gardens in St. Louis and Kansas mm-hmm. City and Nashville. Are there any around here locally?
There are some privately, you know, and the University of Missouri has what they consider botanical gardens pretty nice, too. Mm-hmm. There's some beautiful ones that the Sinkfields have, one that's absolutely like world class. Mm. But nothing that I know of that the public can go to.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, though.
Okay.
I feel like there's one outside of Holt Summit out in the country, but I'd have to...
We'll have to look
into
that.
Find out more information on that.
All right. All right. So where are we at on that part of the project? How far are we along?
The schematic design is done. So now they're for phase one. I believe it'll be presented to the commission next month in the September meeting. We'll work on the cost estimates for that phase one and see what we can do to start with. It will be a process. It'll take some time. We'll have to start small, but it was important to design this thing for long-term success, right?
Sure, sure.
So we'll start working on the cost estimates, which will take about a month, and then we'll budget, and then hopefully get started on the construction documents for phase one. So
okay.
Have something to go this spring.
Okay. So the other project we made reference to is Adrian's Island. Mm-hmm. Kind of give us an idea of the development of that project.
We're waiting on product.
Yeah.
The famous line of, chain supply issues.
Right.
Supply chain issues. So we're finishing the shelter. We're putting in the capital remnants. We're waiting on the block layers for the restroom facility. We're waiting on approval for the electrical plan to get the lights and electrical down there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're close, but I think it'll be spring before everything's really ready.
Yeah.
Those things. So, but it's coming along. I mean, it functions as a park now. We have a counter at the top of the bridge. I think we're averaging around 3,500 visits per month, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's got nice traffic on it, so.
Yeah, it's been a lot of excitement about mm-hmm. it, and certainly looking forward to when it's more completed.
Mm-hmm.
So is there like a phase two for the park?
Not now. Once we get those sort of things done, we're going to kind of sit for a while and see how it functions at that point, see what we need to do.
Yeah.
Now, there will be kind of a phase 1B, if you will. We are going to be doing some of the natural trails through the woods, you know,
mm-hmm.
Really, we only developed on about 6 acres of the property. There's a lot more property on, you know,
it's
there.
It's like 40 acres, isn't it?
It's almost 40 acres of
yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to work on some of the natural trails that go back in the woods. And we got a couple of eagle's nests that we're going to pay special attention to. Keep, you know, the distance okay there. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool to be able to walk by and see those big nests and see the eagles every so often.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of trails that'll go back in the woods there. So we'll be working on that this fall as well.
Okay. So all of this kind of leads me up to a discussion. A few years ago, there was a master plan kind of created for parks. How are we coming along on the master plan? What's the next steps for parks?
Well, I think we're coming along real good. I mean, we're able to, you know, set aside money every year to kind of knock some of these things off. Keep it in mind, again, that we want to become the most inclusive park system that we possibly can. Everyone can play together. So, you know, every year we're able to put money towards that. You know, it's been a few years, actually. I think 4 years since we completed it. It was one of the first things I did when I got here. And I think we're about at a time where we need to look back through it real closely, put things in there that we've done because we've accomplished some really good things
mm-hmm.
That the community has responded really well to. And then really look at it again, you know, okay, what's next? What do we really need to hit next? And then as always, it's just finding funding.
Yep.
That's what we got to do. I always have believed that, you know, financial resources follows good plan. So it's job number one to get that good plan. And then let's find the money. If people really want this, we'll do our best to find the money for it.
Yeah. So looking back those few years, I mean, what's the one park project that just stands out that you're most pleased by?
Community park, for sure.
Why is that? I mean, it's not like it's the biggest park,
nope.
Right? It's not like the highest profile park. So why community park?
Because it really reiterates what's important to the community, and that is playing together, right? And mm-hmm. and why it's important is because when I first got here, I quickly realized that community park was in a historically black part of our community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next to Lincoln, the Foot District, it had all this history. I learned for the first time about the Green Book when I was having conversations with people in the community around Community Park, you know, and understood the importance and all the things that happened around that park. And then I learned that at one time that park housed a pool that was mm-hmm. kind of the unofficial segregated pool of our community. But it was taken away. It was torn out because there was bad plumbing. And then what was put in this park was kind of second-rate playground equipment from other parks with no restroom. More people lived in a one-mile radius around that particular park than any other park we have in the community.
Wow.
And so it spoke to me from the very beginning because bad things were happening in that park because there was no traffic and because it was terrible equipment. And, you know, it's like we basically caused that. We, you know, when things aren't kept up, bad things happen in spaces, right?
Sure.
So it just became apparent to me that should be the first thing that we do, and the commission agreed, and we were able to build a park there, and that's what we did. We built a park from the ground up, and we spent $3 million, and that's what a park costs. And
yeah.
We put nice equipment in there, and we keep it nice, and it's got a huge amount of traffic every day in that park. And so kind of just from gathering data to listening to the community and then to building it and then watching it function. That's why I think it's what I'm most pleased with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the thing that's on your heart right now that you want to try to address next?
There are so many. there's so many. You know, I think that the biggest one this year is going to be Washington Park, you know, because again, Washington Park is one of those parks that has kind of been a lot of things to a lot of people over the years.
Sure.
It's the one that is in a real heart of our community, right? It's in a really, it's right on a greenway. It's right on our busiest street of town, yet it's all cut up. And it's really nothing. It's a lot of things, right? It's got an ice rink. It's got Vivian Field. It's got a skate park, a pretty poor skate park. I want to address that this year. A lot of people would say it's our worst park, right? And that's what people say to me. It's not necessarily what I say, but that's what some say. It's just kind of, you know, it doesn't feel good.
Right.
But it has the potential in my mind to be one of our best parks because of where it's at. On the Greenway, by Wears Creek, we've started cleaning that, you know, of the invasive species and cleaning it up. We've fixed the bridges that were built by prison labor back in the 40s. You know, we've put lights on them. So we're doing a lot of things to get the infrastructure ready and then putting play features out there, a bike park, improving the skate park, doing some things out there. And again, going back again to the data, which is what I like to work on.
Sure.
That is also one of the highest populated areas in that 1 mile radius, right?
Right.
And lots of lower income housing right there, right up the hill. Where do those kids go to play, right? That's the question I ask. They got to go a long ways to play.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
No.
And so we want to really address that park this year.
All right. So, Todd, if folks want to get involved with parks, need more information about parks, how's the best way they can get plugged into a variety of parks features as well as programs that you're providing?
We have a really strong presence on social media, lots of followers, lots of information that gets out. So I'd start there at our different social media sites. It's got every kind of information that you want. Or jcparks.com obviously is one of the best places as well. So jcparks.com or our social media, and there's lots of things to do. We need lots of people to support us and to help us, and we appreciate that very much.
All right. Well, thanks, Todd, for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.